From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run. Job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about folks who are killing the planet and folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses. So please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this is not couch potato radio, it's activist radio. And I urge you to take the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't in the woods up in a tripod or a tree sit or locked down at the road blockades. Remember, if you have information, announcements, or comments for the Earth First Radio staff, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information later on in the show. Let's move into animal news here. From California, we read that, remember our victory at getting the imperiled Sierra Nevada bighorn sheep listed as endangered? As you may recall, in April, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service responded to the petition we filed with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Friends of the Inyo Wilderness Society and the Sierra Nevada Bighorn Sheep Foundation and listed this jeopardized Sierra Mountaineer as endangered. The listing was temporary, unfortunately, the emergency measure that expires before the end of the year. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering a permanent listing that would pick up where the emergency listing expires. Please address your support so that we can bring these animals back from the brink of extinction. Please write to Field Supervisor, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Ventura Fish and Wildlife Office, 2493 Portola Road, Suite B, Ventura, California, 93003. That address, again, for your comments on the endangered species listing for the Sierra Nevada bighorn sheep is Field Supervisor, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Ventura Fish and Wildlife Office, 2493 Portola Road, Suite B, Ventura, California, 93003. And here's some pretty nasty news about some animals out in California. This is from an article written by Eric Brazil of the San Francisco Examiner staff. Kesterson National Wildlife Refuge, already infamous as the place where selenium poisoned thousands of birds, has just presented scientists with a startling environmental puzzle: an outbreak of hermaphroditic rodents. A third of the 87 field mice, house mice, deer mice, and California voles trapped during U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's annual biological monitoring study at the Merced County Refuge had both male and female reproductive organs. Although the rodents examined had elevated levels of selenium in their livers, scientists doubt that the element caused the duplication of their reproductive systems. Studies of selenium's effect on laboratory mice have not induced similar deformities. A number of the intersex mammals was something we found very unexpectedly, and we're not sure what to make of it yet, said biologist Gary Santolo of a Sacramento consulting firm C2HM Hill, who headed the Kesterson Field study. What makes the discovery even more mysterious is that it was evidently not caused by a genetic mutation, Santolo said. If the intersex abnormality was seen across four species, it's unlikely it is the result of a genetic mutation, and is probably the result of an environmental influence, the report said. Hermaphroditism is a condition only rarely encountered in Kesterson in the annual biological monitoring studies that have been underway for more than a decade. Why did we see more in 98 than in other years? What was different? It's going to take us a while to figure that out, Santolo said. Because Kesterson is a fairly closed system and no longer receives drain water from San Joaquin Valley Farms, it has no obvious contamination sources. Consequently, the report says, naturally occurring agents should also be considered as having a role in this phenomenon. It's fair to say that if it happened in four species and happened suddenly, it's indicative of an environmental cause of some sort, said Dr. Alan Akis, an endocrinologist, pediatrician, and assistant clinical professor of medicine at UCSF. Birth deformities can also be caused by endocrine disruptors such as DDT, but Oshus said that such a cause in the case of Kesterson rodents is unlikely. A mouse and vole trapping program is being launched outside Kesterton to learn whether intersex rodents are proliferating elsewhere, said Michael Delamore, chief of the Bureau of Reclamation's drainage program in Fresno. Rarely, if anywhere, do folks look at the critters like we do at Kesterton, Delamore said. Hermaphroditism has rarely been observed in Kesterton's rodent population. It last appeared in 1995 when 3% of the rodents trapped showed intersex characteristics. However, in 1998, 15 of 33 house mice, 7 of 30 deer mice, 5 of 17 harvest mice, and 2 of 7 voles showed these characteristics. Deer mice and house mice had also had enlarged left testes. These numbers may be conservative because the test animals were examined when female reproductive structures had not yet enlarged. Technically, Santolo said, the rodents seem to be pseudo-hermaphroditic. They appear to be males from the outside and have fully developed set of female organs internally, although they lack a vagina, he said. Kesterson is located 14 miles north of Los Banos in Merced County off Highway 140. For 6 years, beginning in 1979, Kesterson's 1,300-acre reservoir, part of the 80-mile San Luis Drain managed by the Bureau of Reclamation, was a sump for toxic runoff from farms in the Westlands Water District on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley. It has since been filled in. Gary Zahn, manager of the San Luis National Wildlife Refuge, of which Kesterson is a part, describes it as a dry upland, except during heavy rains when some standing water accumulates. In 1985, an investigation into the cause of the death and deformation of thousands of birds at the refuge disclosed that selenium, a naturally occurring byproduct of agricultural runoff, was being deposited in the ponds in massive quantities. It was responsible for poisoning and causing birth defects in the refuge's birds. That same year, then-Secretary of Interior Donald Hodel invoked the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and closed Kesterson's evaporation ponds. The San Luis drain was plugged, and in 1988, Kesterson was drained. The Bureau has spent $50 million cleaning up Kesterson, which is only a part of the San Luis National Wildlife Refuge that does not allow cars. The just-published report disclosed that the refuge still allows higher than normal levels of selenium in both invertebrate and vertebrate life in its soil and water, but the environment there is no longer a toxic sump as it was in 1985. And from Washington, D.C., we have news about the endangered species and critical habitat. Designations of critical habitat for threatened and endangered species in the United States has come under fire from two fronts, and environmental groups are preparing to fight to retain these special protections under the Federal Endangered Species Act. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service published a notice in the Federal Register last Monday announcing the agency's intent to clarify the role of habitat in endangered species conservation. On June 23rd, the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works is scheduled to mark up a Republican-sponsored bill which would delay critical habitat designations until late in the process of protecting a listed species. The Fish and Wildlife Service notice focuses on streamlining the rules governing designations of critical habitat in the survival of threatened and endangered species. Critical habitat can be areas which currently host an endangered species or areas outside the species' current range that are considered essential for the conservation of that species. Under the Endangered Species Act, federal agencies cannot take actions resulting in, quote, destruction or adverse modification of critical habitat. The Fish and Wildlife Service has historically been very slow to designate critical habitat, having to be sued often That's a comment by me, as the agency has seen little additional value for most species in these designations. Other provisions of the Endangered Species Act, including prohibitions against federal actions that would jeopardize the existence of any listed species, provide significant protection, the agency has said. And determining critical habitat boundaries it requires extensive and expensive studies into the range of a species and, in some cases, the economic impacts of the habitat designation. In recent years, environmental groups have aimed a torrent of lawsuits at the Service and Department of Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt over the agency's delays in designating critical habitat. The suits have tied up agency resources, and the agency says they have prevented action on the listing of some imperiled species. The agency said, "The consequences of critical habitat litigation activity is that we are utilizing much of our very limited listing program resources in litigation support, defending active lawsuits and notice of intent to sue relative to critical habitat, and complying with a growing number of these adverse court orders. In the meantime, our efforts to respond to listing petitions, to propose listing of critically imperiled species, and to make final listing determinations on existing proposals are being significantly delayed. There are species not yet listed in regions and geographic locations where litigation support has and will continue to consume much of our funding resources." Environmentalists say, however, the agency is resisting implementation of the only provision under the ESA to actually protect unoccupied habitat for endangered species. "Most species are on the list because they are there because in part of habitat issues," said Mike Santori of Defenders of Wildlife. "Their habitat has been degraded, their range has been restricted, and unless we can protect habitat that will allow them to expand their populations, we'll never recover. They'll never get off the list." And moving to Oregon, in a dishonest attempt to incite hostility against conservation activists, the North Fork of the John Day Ranger District has been playing shady politics. The Ranger District has blamed forest activists for its decision to close the Tower Fire area to mushroom picking, firewood cutting, and even needed restoration efforts. Since a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling last November 5th, which stopped all logging and logging-related ground-disturbing activities in the Tower Fire area, the district has been pretending that the ruling also applied to mushrooming and restoration activities. The lawsuit was filed by the League of Wilderness Defenders, Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project, Cascadia Fire Ecology Project, Blue Mountain Native Forest Alliance, and others to protect salmon, steelhead, bull trout, and other area wildlife. The November 5th court decision was a victory for these species' chances for continued survival. The Oregon Ranger District's slanderous pretension that the lawsuit has anything to do with their own decision to shut the area down to other activities or its failure to conduct needed restoration is not only a blatant lie, but potentially endangers the lives and well-being of conservation activists living in this conservative rural area. But perhaps this was the Ranger District's intent all along. If you wish to express your feelings about this outrageous act, please call the North Fork John Day Ranger District Ranger at 541-427-3231. That's the North Fork John Day District Ranger. That number is 541-427-3231, or the Regional Office of the Forest Service at 503-808-2200. That's the Regional Office. I suppose that's in Portland, at 503-808-2200. In other Oregon news, we need to fire off letters and faxes to our Oregon representatives ASAP. Senate Bill 678 passed the Senate and House committees and is headed for a vote this next week in the House of Oregon. This bill, as amended, would make protesting within a quarter mile in any direction of a logging operation illegal. Just being in the area, even if it's on public land, could be construed as an interference. Protesting our civil right would be a Class A misdemeanor with a $5,000 fine and possibly a year in jail. It passed without even one senator against it, so we will have to hit the House hard to get enough support to turn this down. This is a priority for all Oregonians. It would not be a bad idea to get letters off to the governor as well. Based on our freedom of speech and our right to public land, this should be vetoed. Your citizen action, Senate Bill 678, as amended, makes interference with logging or other agricultural operations a Class A misdemeanor, punishable by 1 year in jail or a $5,000 fine. Passed the Senate 29-0, passed the House committee, and is scheduled for a House vote this week. Oregon Peace Works and many, many, many other Oregon environmental organizations oppose the bill. Who to contact? Michael Kerrigan at Oregon Peace Works. His number, 503-585-2767. That's 503-585-2767. Or by email at opw@teleport.com. That's opw@teleport.com. Contact your Oregon representative or Oregon governor soon. Moving overseas, this is a letter. Dear friends, we would like to ask you to support our campaign against the candidacy of Poprad Tatry in Slovakia for hosting the Olympic Winter Games in 2006. Organization of the Olympic Games is planned to be organized in two national parks and would destroy a fragile mountainous areas. It is a very urgent matter that the International Olympic Committee will make its final decision in Seoul, Korea on June 19th. That's a couple days from this broadcast. Below is some addresses. Mr. Juan Antonio Samaranch, Samaranch, President of the International Olympic Committee. His email address is juanantonio.samaranch@ioc.olympic.org. Once again, the email address is Juan Antonio, all one word, dot Samaranch, Samaranch, at ioc.olympic.org. Beginning in 1991, Friends of the Lubicon conducted a consumer boycott against the transnational paper company Daishawa in order to assist the Lubicon Lake Indian Nation in fending off impending clear-cutting on their traditional territory. The province of Alberta granted Daishawa the rights to clear-cut unneeded Lubicon lands in 1989, even though the Lubicon land rights in the area remained unresolved and despite well-known Lubicon objections. That boycott was enormously successful. Since the boycott began, Daishawa has been forced to stay out of the Lubicon territory year after year. The boycott was so successful, in fact, that in January 1995, the Friends were slapped with a multi-million-dollar lawsuit by Daishawa, which attempted to take away their right to conduct that consumer boycott in Canada. For the last 4.5 years, the Friends of the Lubicon have been fighting a bitter legal battle with Daishawa, defending that right, which culminated in a lengthy 28-day trial in the fall of 1997. The Daishawa v. Friends of the Lubicon verdict was delivered in April 1998 by Justice McPherson, who confirmed that the Friends could continue their boycott of Daishawa products. Daishawa, of course, immediately launched an appeal of that decision. When he launched that appeal in May 1998, Daishawa's lawyer Peter Jarvis told the Friends that, quote, "Our clients trust that Friends of the Lubicon will not perceive the delivery of the notice of appeal as any change in the position of Daishawa Incorporated, that a negotiated resolution between Daishawa Incorporated and Friends of the Lubicon is in the best interest of all parties and will continue to be pursued." They added, quote, "Our clients have also instructed us to advise you of their strong desire to continue to pursue the prospect of a negotiated resolution of this matter." Shortly thereafter, just such a negotiated resolution was arrived at when Daishawa finally agreed not to cut or buy wood cut on unceded Lubicon Lake Indian Nation territories until a land rights settlement was reached between the Lubicon Nation and both levels of government, Alberta and Canada. Apparently, Daishawa reached an arrangement with the province of Alberta, which gave Daishawa clear rights to clear-cut Lubicon territory in return for rights to cut in another area of the Lubicon traditional territory. Having gained the written commitment from Daishawa that they had been seeking all along, the Lubicon Lake Indian Nation called off the successful boycott of Daishawa products in June of 1998, about a year ago. In February of this year, Friends of the Lubicon filed a motion in Ontario Code asking the court to dismiss Daishawa's appeal of the ruling, which allowed them to continue their consumer boycott of Daishawa products. The reason the appeal should be dismissed, the Friends argued, was that Daishawa had since made a commitment not to cut or buy wood cut in Lubicon territory until a lands rights settlement was reached between the Lubicons and both levels of government, and a harvesting agreement negotiated with the Lubicon respects their wildlife and environmental concerns. As a result, Daishawa's legal action is seeking to shut down a boycott which no longer exists. On February 23rd of this year, Alberta provincial government announced that significant portions of Daishawa's former forest management area would be reallocated to other parties. Parts of the lands being reallocated included those traditional Lubicon territories. Shortly after the call for expressions of interest in logging these areas went out, a group of Indian bands from the region, including the government-created Woodland Cree Band, the Loon River Band, and the Whitefish Band, along with Daishawa Marubeni Incorporated, applied for the rights to log in the areas put back on the auction block after Daishawa traded them for less controversial lands. The joint proposal indicated that the bands would do the logging and sell the wood to Daishawa. On May 28th, DMI announced that it had signed a major 5-year timber logging contract with Kitas Kinau Logging Limited, a joint venture involving the Woodland, Loon, and Whitefish bands. Their contract stipulates that they log a minimum of 100,000 cubic meters of wood per year. Daishawa will then process the wood at their Peace River pulp mill. Given that new logging rights have not yet been granted in the areas which overlap the Lubicon traditional territory, for now the area they are currently set to log is northeast of the Peace River, according to a DMI press release, and northeast of the Lubicon area of concern, according to DMI communications manager Iwa Ardell. Daishawa needs to hear that ongoing bullying of the Lubicon and their supporters, who are not even boycotting Daishawa, is unacceptable. Lubicon supporters are encouraged to write to Daishawa and let them know that this must stop. Daishawa should also be told that people are watching them to ensure that they keep the promise they made not to cut or buy wood cut in Lubicon traditional territory until the lands rights settlement is reached. And they need to be told that if they try to use Aboriginal people to break their promise to stay off Lubicon lands, it will be seen by the world as exactly what it is, a cynical divide-and-conquer maneuver designed to make profits for Daishawa at everyone else's expense. Lastly, the Alberta provincial government needs to be told to stop taking actions designed to provoke confrontation and stop attempts to undermine ongoing Lubicon negotiations. Offering logging rights in areas they know are part of Lubicon traditional territory on one hand, while simultaneously expressing publicly their wish to join Lubicon negotiations on the other, undermines their credibility and calls into question their sincerity. Premier Ralph Klein should be asked whether he is at all serious about resolving the Lubicon issue. Here's the addresses to write to: Tokiro Kawamura, President Daishawa Marubeni International, Suite 1700, 1095 West Pender Street, Vancouver, British Columbia, V6E2M6. I'll repeat that address slowly. Tokiro, that's T-O-K-I-R-O, Kawamura, K-A-W-A-M-U-R-A, President, Daishawa Marubeni International, Suite 1700, at 1095 West Pender Street, P-E-N-D-E-R, Vancouver, British Columbia, V6E2M6. And of course, Premier Ralph Klein, Province of Alberta, Alberta Provincial Legislature, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, is the other address. In May, the Mexican Army captured and jailed Rudolfo Montiel and others who resisted the logging of Pentalan for the Boise Cascade Mill in Guerrero. Two others were killed. The survivors were tortured and have been sent to the Iguala jail. They are accused of drug trafficking, legal possession of guns and army uniforms. I believe that's illegal. And the local environmental and human rights organizations believe the real reason is their opposition to the destruction of their forest resources. One fact that supports their position is that Rudolfo Montiel was jailed, and new heads of the Union of Ejidos Ruben Figueroa, former partners of the Boise Cascade in the region, tried to start logging the forest again, but campesinos stopped them again. Local people think that even the capture of Montiel and others was promoted by the heads of UERF. Also in Pariso, Atoyac, and near Petalan, the local campesinos stopped the cutting of the forest as a defense against the trafficking of wood resources. All right, that's about all the time I have for now. To get news, announcements, or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send those letters, donations, CDs, or cassettes to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 950161. Excuse me. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. For more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening, and please tune in again. And now we're going to have another tune. This one is called They Sure Don't Make Hippies Like They Used To, written and performed by Daryl Cherney off his They Sure Don't Make Hippies Like They Used To cassette.
Once there were some hippies living amongst the trees, picking flowers, smoking joints, hair down to their knees. Then one day they woke up to a nasty chainsaw's roar, and a logging crew was cutting down the public land next door. Now our hippies were not happy with Mother Nature going down, so they called their local congressmen and some bureaucrats in town. But our hippies' words weren't heeded, but they swore they would prevail. So they bought some Stanley hammers and some 60-penny nails. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. They used to live in peace, but now they're spiking trees. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. No, hippies don't take no shit anymore. When the loggers left that evening, the hippies snuck into the woods, and they figured that 500 spikes should fix that forest good. And they poured sand into the crankcase for to get a dozer sick. They put nails down on the haul road to make their tires leak a bit. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. They once were stoned on grass, but now they're kicking ass. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. No, hippies don't take no shit anymore. The next day at the work site, the loggers had a big surprise. Their dozer engine seized up, and their tires dropped like flies. And before they could raise a chainsaw, they found this note and cursed, 'cause it read, no dice, these trees are spiked, sign love and peace, earth first. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. They used to speak of peace, but now they practice what they preach. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. No, hippies don't take no shit anymore. No, I'll tell you folks, hippies don't take no shit anymore.